What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. I'm recording this on February 16th, Sunday afternoon, and it is currently All-Star weekend. We have the game tonight. We had all the other events last night. But today, I'm actually going to talk all things Lakers and early returns on the Luka Doncic trade and the Lakers' outlook for not only this season, but the coming season. Can they contend this year? And I'm joined by Harrison Fagan, who has covered the Lakers for the better part of a decade. So going to get his take on the trade and everything around the team this year and moving forward. We also talked a little bit about the All-Star game, the new format, and is there a way that we could maybe fix the game even more to hopefully get some more competitive basketball being played on All-Star weekend? So with that said, let's go ahead and get right into it. So we've got Harrison Fagan joining me on the show today. He is a editor, writer, podcaster, social media producer, among other things for SB Nation and their NBA dedicated team site. Also has previously covered the Lakers for better part of a decade, had his own podcast, The Silver Screen and Roll. But let me know if I missed anything there, Harrison, but thank you for hopping on today. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Sean. We had like a, I would say, solid All-Star Saturday night. I think the dunk contest sort of saved it. And so, yeah, excited to talk NBA and Lakers. And, you know, it's like I was telling you before I jumped on the show, I have covered a lot of insane, bizarre Lakers stories over my, 10 plus years being around the team and writing about them. And yeah, we had one that just might top them off over the last little bit.
Definitely. Yeah. So, like I said, thanks for coming on. I felt on topic, just given all the stuff with the Lakers over the last few weeks, as you mentioned. Probably, at least for me personally, the craziest, most unexpected, ridiculous trade that I've ever seen. I know a lot of other people have kind of echoed that sentiment, but I want to just start off and ask, what was your initial reaction? I know when I was watching a Suns Blazers game at like 12:30 a.m. East Coast time on a Saturday night, and when I saw it come through, I disassociated from the game. I was like, yeah, had that little moment.
The same
where
reaction
I was like,
as the players as they were finding out on the
literally,
bench. You know,
just yeah. I was like, I realize I haven't been paying attention for the last 4 minutes of this game, and I need to rewind because I just am not paying attention because I was so like, this can't be real. So
that's commitment to the bit to actually rewind the Blazers Suns game. Be like, no, this is important though. I gotta catch up on these last 4 minutes.
I know, especially for how rough of a watch Phoenix has been recently. But yeah. Just want to get your take. I mean, as someone who's covered the Lakers, what was your initial reaction to the trade?
This is not original among like a lot of people, but my first thought was like, oh, Shams got hacked, because like that's what everyone's reaction was, because it's like, number one, we've seen this stuff happen before. Like, we've seen NBA figures like get their accounts hacked, and usually it's like to like hawk a crypto scam or like tweet like crazy things or whatever. Somebody doesn't like come up with like a seemingly CBA legal trade just to like drop in the middle of the night on a Saturday. But it was still like, I'm like, this is so crazy. There's no way this is true. Like, this is somebody, like, you know, respect to that hacker for trying to pull off something subtle and funny and whatever, you know, like, not please don't hack Shams's account, anyone. I'm not encouraging that, but it was I at least like they tried something different, so good for them, you know. And it was our Slack for NBA site managers who I manage was sort of popping off, and they're like, what is happening? And I'm like, guys, come on, I've trained you better than this. This is so clearly a hack. There's no way the Mavs traded Luka for AD and one pick in the middle of the night. You know, like, it's just, that's a week before the trade deadline. That's not something that happens, you know, like Luka would have had to demand a trade. Like, there's all these, you know, and then it's like 10 minutes go by and it's like, they're like, Shams posted it on Instagram. And I'm like, oh, okay. So somebody stole his phone. I got it. Okay. and then it was like, it's like ESPN posted, and I'm like, okay, so the Twitter servers have just been hacked. Someone just hacked the entire server and is just really committed to this AD for Luka, Markieff Morris, and Maxi Kleber deal, you know? And then it was like, we had like reporters from other outlets were like, I somehow can confirm that this is true. And it's like, oh my God, did this, like, what happened? Like, did somebody, did somebody steal Rob Pelinka's phone, you know, or something like that? Like, is, like, Nico what is Harrison. Happening? Yeah, Nico Harris, maybe both, you know, they were at that coffee shop and somebody just walked by, swiped both their phones and was just like texting and confirming to reporters, really committed to this journalism prank. And then it, like, at some point it just set in. I'm like, oh my God, like, this is real. And my, you know, I think it finally set in for me when my longtime co-host and friend Anthony Irwin called me and was like, can you do an emergency pod? And I'm like, I guess. Like, I don't, I still don't know what I'm going to say beyond like, what? Huh?
Yeah.
You know, but I could try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what's so funny is like, everybody had the same reaction, basically. It's like, that's when you know it's crazy. And from the Mavs perspective, likely not a good move. Is just
how bad are you feeling about yourself as Nico Harrison if you see when you see the reaction to the trade? Because they're like, all right, I think we pulled off a solid win-win deal, you know, everything. Yeah.
Well, I think one of the reasons why people thought the hack thing was happening is because they were like, all right, I saw people saying like, well, if you're gonna hack, at least make the trade a little more real. Like, throw all the assets and all the picks. Maybe throw Austin Reeves in there. Make it sound a little bit more palatable.
Like, Dalton Connect is at least gonna be in the deal. Yeah, right. Like, you know, they would at least get both the picks the Lakers can trade.
Totally.
You know,
if not swaps, also. You know, so it was insane. And
it's like, one, come on, do better knowledge of the CBA hackers. Come on.
I know, seriously. Yeah. But yeah, no, I shared a similar sentiment. I mean, it was just truly unbelievable. I know people say that word a lot, not only in sports, but just in life in general. And it's hyperbole most of the time, but this was legitimately fitting to use that word. Yes. It was not believable. Like, it made no sense. The timing, the way it went down, the package, just everything around it was completely just not something that anyone could have foreseen coming, and something that anyone probably would have recommended Dallas do. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, the AD injury certainly is not making the early returns great for Dallas, but also, I mean, they seem to be handling it not great. As you mentioned, Nico Harrison and his reaction, like, they're kicking fans out of games now who were suggesting they should fire him, which also not a great look. So, it's not a good time to be a Dallas fan. That's all I'll say.
Which, like, I mean, fair. I get it. Like, if somebody showed up to my workplace and was like, fire Harrison, as many people have showed up to his workplace and been like, fire Harrison, I would, you know, I would not be like thrilled about it. But it's also like, you know, it's an arena. I promise you, this is not the worst thing fans have yelled in your arena and probably not gotten kicked out for it. You know, it's like, there are probably people, it's like, were you kicking out everyone like chanting fire Jason Kidd a couple of years ago? It's like, probably not. I don't know. Is Jason Kidd looking at you a little funny now? It's like, wait a second, we could throw them out for that. That's kind of, you know.
Totally. I mean, I feel like fans pretty regularly have chanted, I mean, for some of the franchises that have been less successful, that maybe have had greater histories that just haven't been relevant recently, I feel like the sell the team, those kind of chants are like pretty regular things that are said in stadiums.
I think that is a completely benign fandom chant. Like, I understand why if you're the person that they're chanting at, like, that would not feel good. That's kind of the point, you know? And it's like, they get to yell, they get to boo these players, like, they get to what, like, you have to develop a thicker skin if you're going to sort of be in this. And it's like, I understand it would obviously be unpleasant as it was going on, but that does not cross the line of like inappropriate conduct. Fans have been, you know, for as long as I can remember and as long as I've covered sports and longer, you know, just following sports, and, you know, I'm sure you grew up, you know, watching sports too. It's like, cheer, fire so-and-so chants are as old as basically like fans being aware of who's running the team itself. You know, it's like, obviously in the early day of pro sports, when it was just like, hey, let's go watch these guys hit each other or whatever, there were maybe less aware of like the mechanics of like who was running the team and all that stuff. It wasn't as organized, but like in the online era, people chant fire so-and-so, I feel like every fan base probably does it to someone at least once a year.
Yeah. And if, especially if these guys are checking online on like Twitter at any point, there's some much worse things being said about people related to the sports world.
And like, you know, obviously like the death threats thing, like there have been people that are like, there's no way that's happening. And I'm like, I have tweeted, you know, like mildly negative things about a team that I cover and had people say that they want I was dead. I 100% believe that there are people that have sent him death threats over this. Like, and obviously that's horrible. And like, that's not okay. But fire this guy, like, yeah, that's, you yeah. know, that's within the realm of acceptable fan behavior. And like, if we're going to crack down on that, like, what are you going to do? You're going to throw people out the next time they like they boo a bad Mavs performance, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just like, are we you know, is it like our Mavs Moneyball had like a really funny post called like, are the Mavericks are a totalitarian regime now, you know? And it was written basically in the sense of like, you know, you must not upset dear leaders, the Adelson family, and you know, all this stuff. And it's just like, yeah, like, are you going to go that far? Is it going to be like any negative, but like if somebody groans during it, somebody misses a three, are you going to kick them out? You know, it's like, where are we drawing the line here?
Yeah. And in some ways you want them to have that level of passion and care for the team, you know, like it's all from a good place. They want what's best for the franchise and for the team. And they were just obviously like heartbroken because that city loved Luka. Like I said this on my previous pod when I talked about it, but I'm like, Luka was the Mavs. Like that was like synonymous. Yeah. Like he was, again, we throw around things like face of franchise all the time. Like he was the face of the franchise and it was totally out of left field. And he was supposed to continue to be that for another 5 to 10, if not longer, years in his NBA career, however long he ends up playing. But so I get it from their perspective. And I think that, I think that the Mavs front office and ownership should have a little bit more leeway probably to allow them to cope and go through the processing of what just happened.
Because all you're doing is making it worse, and people are just going to get madder that that's how you're reacting, and you're just extending the storyline. Then people are covering it, and then other fans who maybe were sort of like more like, oh, you know, let's see what the team, you know, because there's always the fans that are like, you know, oh, we got to try Nico, in Nico we trust, you know. I think there were very few of those Mavs fans, but I'm sure there were the really homer Mavs fans that were like, you know, we got to let these guys are paid to run the team for a reason. Let's see what they do. Maybe Anthony Davis will help and solve some defensive problems for us. And then it's like, even those people are going to start to see, it's like, wait a second, you're firing you're throwing people out of games for like being mean to Mark Cuban and saying like he shouldn't have sold the team and he made this happen. Like, that's kind of crazy.
No, I totally agree. But yeah, shifting back over to the Lakers a little bit, I know it's a tiny sample size so far, but overall I've just had a little bit more time to kind of process things and understand the current context of the team and how Luka fits into that. And like I said, it's only been two games, both of which were against the Utah Jazz. They were 1-1 in those games. First game, they kind of completely blew Utah out from the start. Second game was they were trailing most of the game and weren't able to overcome the early deficit. But what have you seen so far out of the limited, I think Luka played 23 minutes a game or something in two games. Him and LeBron have shared, I think, 80 possessions on the court. So tiny sample size. So impossible to make any sort of grandiose like proclamations about the fit or anything like that. But in the small sample, what have you seen between the two of them on the court? And what have you liked? Do you have any concerns about the fit just out of the presumed potential redundancy in the skill sets? Or what have you seen so far?
First of all, how dare you assume that I cannot overreact to an 80% sample size? I am a veteran podcaster. I can get mad about way smaller sample sizes. Come on, Sean.
That is fair. That is very fair.
You know, no, but in seriousness, it's like, you know, the Lakers, they very clearly were energized by Luka's presence and wanted to play hard in that first game. And then the second game, I think someone told them that the All-Star break started on Wednesday morning and they just didn't realize there was a game that night, you know, and it was like they were down like, they were down 30 by the time they realized that wasn't a preseason game or a practice, like it counts. So yeah, like you said, like very skewed, limited sample size so far of these guys, but it's, you know, I mean, the good is obvious. It's like Luka is still completely obviously playing his way into shape after missing, you know, the last several weeks. And it's like, I heard someone make the point, and I think it was a good one, that even if he was coming back with the Mavs, he would be adjusting and sort of getting his sea legs back just from being out that long. And that's a team that is basically built to play Luka ball around him. And whereas like this is, you're walking in with, other than Dorian Finney-Smith, essentially all new teammates that you have not played before. And even DFS, like he may have some muscle memory of how to play off of you, but how much does that really matter? Number one, he's Dorian Finney-Smith. And like, number two, it's like that was years ago. And so, and again, you're still playing your way back into shape as you're trying to adjust to all this and coming into a new situation that you were never expecting to have to move at midseason. You know, it's like, I feel like the guys that demand trades almost have a little bit of a head start, because it's like, are we really going to pretend that it's like Jimmy Butler wasn't watching, like, you know, Warriors and Suns games a little bit,
yeah,
to sort of like get a loose sense, you know, of where he might fit in and where he might be able to help, you know. But it's like Luka, he had no idea this was coming. And so, again, that's not to make excuses for him, but there's a lot of things sort of setting you back right off the bat. And even with all that context, he has had some unbelievable passes that there's like, you know, three players in the NBA currently that can make. And it's just like, he's so clearly unbelievably talented, and it's going to help this team, I think. I think, you know, and we're going to, I'm sure, get into this, you know, as the show goes along. The roster around him doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense for this year. And it sort of seems like the Lakers tried to reset the timeline and then tried to go all in for this year and then sort of had that move fall apart. And so now they're just sort of like in, like, you know, it's not a rebuild. They're obviously going to try their best to win this year, but it's like, their best center is Jackson Hayes, who is bad. And, you know, like, and then their backup is Alex Len, who, again, speaking of small sample sizes, played one game after having like met the team 10 minutes before, but did not look great. You know, I was able to be like, yeah, I could see why a team traded and cut this guy, you know, so we'll see how it goes. And that is going to be certainly like a huge weak point for them as far as like just not having really any playoff level centers. But, you know, I'm very interested to see how this team goes. And I think the offense is going to be unbelievable. I think we're seeing signs of that already.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, in the limited sample, those 80 possessions, they're plus 11.6 net rating. They've got a 127.5 offensive rating. So to your point, they've been really good offensively, and it makes sense. I mean, they've got between not even just LeBron and Luka, but Reeves has developed into a really underratedly great like initiator and offensive weapon for this team.
How many teams have a third guy on the floor that is as capable of playmaking as Austin Reeves? Like, I'm not saying he's an all-star, but it's like your third option to make plays after the defense has sort of compromised is Austin Reeves. Like, that's an unbelievable amount of playmaking on the floor all at once.
Totally. Yeah. And so like, they're going to have minimum one of those guys on the court at all time, probably two of them on the court at most times. Yeah. And where I kind of fell on this is like, I understand the, I won't say lazy narrative, but the narrative that was ultimately always going to go around of like LeBron and Luka, redundant skill sets. It's not going to be a great fit, but these are two of the highest IQ basketball players, not just currently playing, but like maybe ever. And so I'm like, they're going to figure it out. You know what I mean? Like,
They are. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're, you know, I'm not saying they're one and two, but they're, you know, they're certainly in that top tier of basketball IQ.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like people even had a little bit of the same concerns with like Kyrie coming to Dallas with Luka, and just because he's obviously a little bit of a ball dominant player, not in the same way, obviously not much of a playmaker, but more of a scorer, but same sentiment of like high usage guys. And that like proved to work really well. I mean, obviously they made the finals last year, but that fit just felt like a natural fit for both of them. And LeBron's obviously very different, super different playing style from Kyrie, but I also think this is a great opportunity for him to kind of start learning how to play off ball a little bit more. Not that he necessarily needs to learn to, you know, I mean, it's LeBron James. He can do whatever role he wants to do, but especially with his improved shooting. I mean, he's over last year and this year, he's like 40% combined. Like if he's going to shoot 40%+ on spot ups, then like any of those concerns are just completely out the window to me, because that would be the real concern is like if Luka is going to run a little bit more of the offense and like obviously do what he does playmaking wise and find open shooters. If you've got a center who can't really shoot, LeBron, who maybe you don't trust historically, but if he's going to be reliable, then suddenly it's like, well, they've got plenty of spacing. I mean, Reeves is obviously a really good shooter. LeBron's been knocked down, and then Rui and Finney-Smith, you know, they've been inconsistent in their careers, but they're passable, you know. They're league average probably, but at their best can be a little bit better, especially Finney-Smith. I know Rui's been probably, he prefers the mid-range, but you know, he's learned to step back out there a little bit.
Below league average, but it's like he'll be getting such easy attempts, you would think that will sort of juice them up a little bit.
Like I was saying, I mean, I'm not worried about it, especially offensively, just because they're gonna figure it out. Those guys are geniuses. They both like prefer to pass and get others involved. So I don't think there's going to be any sort of like your turn, my turn. I think it's going to take time. Like you said, I think in that first game, I watched the majority of that first game. And it did feel like there was a little bit of like jitters a little bit. Like yeah. They were like, well, should we give it to Luka? Like, and then Luka's like, well, I'm just trying to fit in. And it was this weird kind of like, what are we doing here? No one really knew. Kind of felt like a preseason game for one of the like first one of a big acquisition, which it totally makes sense. But I think they're going to work through those kinks. You know, they just need to get reps. And like you said, Luka just needs to get a little bit more back into game shape, which he will. And I think the All-Star break comes at a perfect time for them, because I would hope that by the time he's back, he can be up to 30, 35 minutes a game back like he typically is, not in the low 20s. But
well, I think according to the Mavs, Luka is going to spend the entire All-Star break like eating nachos and smoking. So we'll see, you know, how he comes back, like if you sort of believe the stories coming out of there. But yeah, I mean, in seriousness, I think, yeah, but this is, you know, he'll get a little bit more chance to rest up after getting some of his sort of like playing legs a little bit back under him. And then, you know, yeah, I agree with you that the, you know, the there's only one ball narrative is sort of almost always misguided. There are times where it's like, you know, it's two guys are like so scoring one dimensional that it's like, yeah, actually that kind of doesn't totally work. But, you know, with two guys that are as good of playmakers as Luka and LeBron, you know, they're going to figure it out. And that first game was a little bit like it was the highest level pickup game you're ever going
to
watch.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Both of them are just like sort of trying to like, you know, it's like, no, I want this guy to like me. Like, let me, you know, I'm not going to take every shot. Like, let me be a good teammate, you know, all that stuff. And so
Reeves is like, fine, I'll shoot it.
Yeah. Reeves was like, wait a second, I got the third best defender on me again. I'm good. and so the third best defender on the Jazz. I think the offense, I'm not even a little bit worried about. Like, there are so many smart players on this team. And, you know, I think, to be honest, JJ has proven himself to be a relatively smart coach. Like, certainly, I think, probably above average in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Least. Early returns have been very solid on JJ.
Yeah. And so, I think the offense is going to be fine. I'm not worried about that at all. It's the other end of the floor where, you know, as I mentioned, I have a little bit of apprehension about, like, if Jackson Hayes is your best interior defender, you don't have a good interior defender. And so that's going to be sort of a problem. And I think, you know, the other thing is, how much do Luka and LeBron's bad habits cause issues for the Lakers when they're both arguing with the refs in tandem on getting back in transition defense? Like, transition defense has always sort of been an issue for the LeBron at Lakers, because he is a guy that, you know, has a lot of feelings about whether or not he was fouled on the previous play sometimes, and sometimes takes his time jogging back on in transition. And Luka is someone who might be even more prone to do
probably
that
worse
LeBron.
Honestly,
maybe the only guy in the league, or no, not the only, but you know, certainly one of a handful of guys who does that stuff more than LeBron, and is like more likely to go and gesticulate at the officials for 30 seconds while his team is on defense. I do think that there's going to be a little bit of like sort of the two Spider-Man pointing meme of them, you know, at each other of like, hey, wait, how could you not get back on defense? That's on you. And it's like, wait a second, you just two plays ago, you just didn't get back on, you know? And so I think there's going to be a little, like, they're going to have to sort of get together there. And I think JJ is going to have to sort of bring them together and be like, you know, not that no coach has tried to get Luka to stop yelling at the officials or whatever, but I do wonder if there's a little something where when it's two guys, both of the same caliber, and it's not easy for the coach to just be like, well, you know, guys, stars get to do that sometimes, and you all got to get back and defend and whatever. It's like, maybe they have a little bit of a realization, like, hey, I need to curb this a little bit. You know, maybe I'm going to lose my temper sometimes, but I got to work a little bit harder on getting back in transition, you know, just to prevent how many easy points we're going to give up. And so there's hope there. But again, I just think that this is like going to be a fairly flawed defensive team. And I do think that limits your playoff ceiling to a degree. Although, again, like, I think that for teams that, you know, I think they're going to be able to outscore a lot of teams. But yeah, I also think that, you know, when you get into a 7-game series and teams have time to sort of pick apart your weaknesses, the Lakers have a number of guys now that can be picked on defensively. And so I do wonder if that sort of starts to have a cascading effect where it's sort of too many, you know, like too many poles holding up the tent are getting knocked down, and it's just the whole thing collapses in on itself.
Yeah. And you've alluded to the center position a couple times, and obviously they're Other big news coming around the deadline was the Mark Williams trade, which was seemed like a good fit for them on paper, but then ultimately was rescinded due to health concerns. I still think there's some back and forth going on right now with the Hornets trying to contest that.
Adam Silver said the Hornets have not filed a formal complaint at his at his availability at All-Star yesterday. So Did they file the complaint like in sweatsuits? You know, like was it like it was an informal complaint? You know, they just they weren't really being that formal about it. They just were yelling at him. But they're like, he's like, do you want to fill out the paperwork? And they're like, no, I don't know. We don't. Yeah. We just want a complaint.
Yeah. But look, I mean, it was a pretty big return for Charlotte. I mean, a first round pick, unprotected, a swap, Dalton Connect, Cam Reddish. I mean, Connect has been fine this year. You know, he's given them some offensive punch and spurts. Still not a great defensive player. But, you know, I mean, he projects as a decent role player, and he's obviously still only a rookie. But then the two picks as well. Like, it was not nothing that they gave up. But I was very high on it for them because I know, obviously, I mean, health is the number one sort of con to this trade is that, I mean, Mark Williams has played 83 games in three seasons, which is like to say he's not reliable is an understatement. Yeah. But I really like his upside, especially offensively. I thought he was going to be the Derek Lively stand-in for Luka on the Mavs, which we've seen that be a super successful formula offensively as a pick and roll partner. He's been inconsistent defensively at times, you know, but I'll point to PJ Washington as a guy who was in a similar situation in Charlotte. More of a theoretical defender, like had the skills and the tools, but like we hadn't really seen it. But it's often when you're a young player, you are such a product of your environment. And so I personally had a belief that Mark Williams could come over and kind of tap into some defensive potential that we haven't really seen from him thus far. And he's looked decent at times. Like it's been worse this year. But even like going back to college at Duke, he was a very good rim protector and he projected as a prospect as a good interior defender as well. But obviously the deal did not happen. But want to get your thoughts on kind of that whole situation. Did you like the fit, first of all? And then are you happy it got rescinded as someone who covers and roots for the Lakers? Like, is that something where you were like, okay, we dodged a bullet there? Or you were like, were you kind of bummed? Because now, like you mentioned, like the center rotation is a little barren to say the least, but what were your thoughts?
Yeah, my first thought is like the Lakers just can't make a normal trade. It's just they don't, you know, there's always got to be something, you know. It's like Rob Pelinka makes like maybe the greatest trade of all time, and they have to have one that's like falling apart and rescinded amidst massive controversy, and then the Hornets somehow behaving even crazier with the like, we're excited to welcome Mark Williams back. The other team made us an offer we couldn't refuse, and you know whatever. But then they're like, but we're going to dispute this and he's totally healthy, but then they're not playing him in basketball games that they've been playing. And it's just like, I don't like just complete mess of a situation that, you know, to at least to me seems to be a little bit more on the Hornets. You know, I like as much as I have no problem calling Rob Pelinka a snake, who a lot of people around the league don't trust. I think in this one, in this specific instance, I struggle to blame him because we see teams not all the time rescind trades, but it is something that happens. And from everything that I've read, it seems to be that essentially teams can fail a physical for any reason they want to. And it's like, I don't know what the conspiracy is that the Lakers would say, oh, we want to make this trade, but then now actually we want to rescind it. You know, I don't know, like what changes between then other than you, like, did they not look up his game logs? Did they not realize how infrequently he, like, I don't know. My assumption is that they had a team doctor evaluate him and go, yeah, you know, I would not bet my career on this guy staying healthy, you know, and the Lakers decided to make sort of a tough call, which, you know, I mean, the person I feel the worst for amidst all this is Mark Williams, who like his, you know, this is going to meaningfully affect his like next contract probably. And, you know, not to say nothing of just like his life and like how it must suck to just have like your injuries discussed, you know, through the media as, you know, as much as they have been over the last little bit. And, you know, just a bunch of people calling you a stiff who can't stay healthy. And when it's like previously they were unaware of who Mark Williams is. And so it's just like, he's the one that I feel the worst for. And then like Dalton Connect, obviously that's gotta be a really awkward, weird situation. But overall, like I think the trade, I was, I'm not going to say like happy to see it rescinded, but I do think that the price was a little steep. And so, and he wasn't a guy that I was in love with after having watched him a little bit. I'm not going to claim to have been like grinding Hornets tape the last couple years, but I did watch some stuff.
Might have to call you a psychopath if you had been, but
yeah, exactly. They weren't, I'm not going to lie. They have not been high on my League Pass watch list, last several years. And so I'm not going to claim to be a Mark Williams expert by any means, but just sort of looking at him holistically as a player, watching some clips, looking into his stats, you know, his measurables, like I can see why the Lakers would be intrigued and I can see why that's someone Luka would want to play with, but I can also, you know, part of me was like, I don't know if this is the guy that you want to throw out those assets for. I think, you know, you can probably do a little bit better on centers for maybe even a cheaper price, because we know that, you know, centers are perpetually available on the trade market. And there's, you know, they seem to be one of the easier things to find in the NBA, as long as you're not just trying to spend the veterans minimum. And so I think the Lakers probably dodged a bullet with the way that this whole situation played out, but we'll see. I mean, maybe Mark Williams ends up like staying healthy the rest of his career and making this look like it would have been a really, you know, cheap price to pay.
Yeah. And I totally understand all of that. I mean, it's hard to have any sort of confidence even before the whole thing was rescinded, just because of the games that he's missed over the last three-ish years of his career. But especially after seeing it, that they got the medicals and they were like, we are too scared off by this to continue to pursue this. And the reason I liked it, though, even at the cost, is like, he's 23 years old. He's got 2 years left on his rookie deal. Like, he's cheap as hell. He's still
younger
young
than rookie Dalton.
I know. Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, it's an investment. I mean, and with his injuries, I don't feel like it would be that like expensive to re-sign him in. Once he does reach like restricted free agency, or if they would have extended him before that, whatever. It's not like it's going to be some $20, $25 million a year contract, probably more in the 10 to 15 range, which at his age, his productivity when he has been on the court, like that's kind of a bargain in my opinion. And it was a scenario where they could have him for the next 5 to 7, if not longer, years, you know what I mean? So that was why I liked it, because it wasn't some rental where they gave up these picks or somebody who's 28, 29, you know what you're getting. So, but again, I totally understand.
Yeah. It's not like, hey, we're taking on picks to take the Yusuf Nurkic deal, you know, or something like that. Like, not that that was like one that they were ever connected to or anything, but it's like that one, it's like, okay, this is clearly like a guy that's on the decline and maybe he can help this year. Probably not. But like, he's also certainly not going to be a weapon for very much longer. You know?
Yeah. Or even someone like Clint Capella, like if they had traded for him for like giving up a first for him, for example, I would have been like, it's cheaper price, but like a first for a guy that, I mean, he's been thoroughly outplayed by Okongwu this season. They still refuse to start Okongwu when Capella's healthy for whatever reason. But yeah, that's one where I would have been like, I don't know, maybe a couple seconds. If it's that cheap, then sure. But, you know, the salary's higher. You'd have to give up more players that probably are guys that are in your rotation. Like, I don't know if Rui might have had to been in a deal like that just to make the numbers work. So that's why I liked it, because it was cheap and it's got much more upside. And it was a guy that's on Luka's timeline. So, but ultimately, yeah, I mean, it makes sense just given all the information that we have now.
Yeah, it was sort of a much riskier version of a deal that has been sort of discussed in like Lakers and Jazz circles for the last like several months
Walker Kessler.
Oh, could they go after Walker Kessler, where it's like, you're not only are you getting a guy that can help right now, but he's also really young. You can re-sign him, you know, and he is a guy that, you know, would exactly sort of fit with like Luka and LeBron's skill set and be someone that is useful alongside them and a good rim protector and whatever. And, you know, a guy that has had probably less issues staying on the floor and stuff like that. But he also is someone that like the Jazz didn't want to give him up, because they're like, well, we have the Lakers, I believe it's like 27 pick, they have the top something protected, and they're like, well, we don't want to make the Lakers better. And so, you know, it was just something that wasn't in the cards, but he was cheap, you know, he could have helped, and you wouldn't have had to give up a major member of your rotation to go and acquire him. And Mark Williams was sort of like a, you know, the next tier down version of that, where you're going and getting someone for a similar price tag, where you're able to have like Cam Reddish be the salary ballast instead of having to be like, oh, we need to have Rui Hachimura and like Gabe Vincent, you know, to match Clint Capella's salary. And it's like, okay, not only are you sending out like two, I don't know how much Clint Capella's may not be that much, but
I think he's making like $22 million or something in that range. So
It would have been like
at least one of those guys would have been in it.
At least Rui. But yeah, it's like, is Clint Capella better than Rui at this point? You know, I guess you could say for the Lakers, maybe. But it's also like, you know, you are losing sort of a useful offensive player to do totally. That. And so you're not giving up nothing. And then in addition to the picks.
Yeah. And like the value is like Rui's worth more to the Lakers than he is on the open market just because of the hole in the rotation they would have there. You know, like you mentioned, I mean, if that was a deal that happened where it was Rui for Capella or something, then suddenly they're pretty thin on the wing after that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that becomes more of an issue. But yeah, I mean, obviously the center position, as you mentioned, pretty weak now. I mean, Jackson Hayes as your starting center and best option is suboptimal, to say the least. Yeah. And then Alex Len is, there's a reason he was available. We do this every year with like buyout guys, and it's like, oh, it's going to make a huge difference. And it's like, when's the last buyout guy that you remember that like made a super meaningful difference?
So I will tell you, he's on the Lakers right now. It's Markieff Morris.
Okay.
But like, it's very rare. You know, only reason I remember that is because it was my team during, you know, during like the bubble season and whatever. And Markieff.
Oh, was he a buyout guy that year? I know he played legit minutes in the finals. So.
Yeah, no, he was a real get for them. And but that it's like extremely rare that you get a guy on a buyout that ends up actually having like any sort of impact, much less being that critical of a player for you, where he was like probably like their eighth or ninth man, tenth. Like where he was like really in the rotation. And there were series where he sort of, you know, the Rockets one especially, where he was able to shift the tide by just allowing them to go smaller and stuff like that. And so I will always appreciate Markieff Morris for that. But it's very rare that a buyout guy is able to contribute to that level. And normally it's more like the other buyout guys the Lakers signed that year in Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith, who you probably forgot were on that team.
And then Christian Coloco is completely not in the rotation, obviously, but it's a hole on the team, there's no doubt about it. So I just ask you, with that big of a hole on the team, I think obviously they're gonna have to play a lot of small ball, and we've seen that already, but do you think this team can contend this season? Like, do you think that there's a world where they can, and I'm not saying win the finals necessarily, but be a factor in the contention like picture? And then what do you view as their ceiling for this season, just given where they are?
To be honest, and this is probably not like a popular answer among Laker fans, but like to me, until I see a little more, like my default is to say, like, I think the ceiling is probably like win around. You know, maybe win two rounds, but I have a really hard time seeing a team with this many sort of holes in it, going like winning three rounds and making it to the finals and then, you know, sort of taking their best shot there. There's just, this is obviously like a good team and I think arguably a better team, even like post trade, but just
higher ceiling at least.
Yeah, exactly. And like Luka's a guy that has shown he can sort of drag you through a playoff series on his own in some ways, in a way that even LeBron at this stage just can't. Like LeBron needs a little bit more help than that at this stage of his career. Obviously, he was a guy that, you know, 5-6 years ago could have done that. But like he's not that level anymore. And Luka is a guy that it's like, he basically almost single-handedly beat the Clippers a couple of years ago as like a rookie or second year player. And so it's like he's that good, and he should win you a round by himself, provided he's healthy and sort of ready to go. But I think that winning two rounds with this much tape, with this many, as you start to play better teams, theoretically, you know, I have a hard time seeing the Lakers making it very far unless there are sort of some upsets on the other side of the bracket that sort of lead to a more advantageous matchup for them. Maybe a team that doesn't really have like that much, you know, sort of driving to, you know, create problems for them at the rim, or like that strong of big men to sort of take advantage of being able to get like basically every offensive rebound you want. But it's like if the Lakers play the Thunder, for example, to me, they're dead on arrival. This is like one of the few teams that they actually probably would have matched up better with Anthony Davis than Luka against, because AD has typically sort of like owned them on the inside and been like a real defensive disruptor on the other, going the other way. And obviously, you know, Luka tortured the Thunder last year too. But a big reason the Mavs were able to win that series is just because they were, you know, like Gafford and Lively were sort of getting whatever they wanted in the paint. And And, you know, the Thunder took some steps to address that by adding Isaiah Hartenstein, who we basically saw do the same thing all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. And it's like, you're telling me Jackson Hayes is going to box out that guy? Like, I don't think so. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, Jackson Hayes is going to have a tattoo of the basket stanchion on him by the end of that series. You know, it's just so I just have a hard time imagining them matching up with a team like that. Like, you know, it's like everybody was like, oh man, Jokic, he owns AD. It's like, all right, you want to see Jackson Hayes defend him for a playoff series? He's going to average 57 points a game.
And Jokic owns everybody to make that clear.
He's the rare guy. He's the rare guy that neutralizes AD's biggest strength. And like, there just aren't that many guys in the league that can do that. And he, like, that's how good he is. And so it's, you know, if you're completely taking away AD's ability to, you know, paper and like a staple and duct tape the entire defense together, then it's like the whole Lakers infrastructure would fall apart. And that was sort of the Jokic problem. And it's like, okay, let's replace AD with Jackson Hayes and see how much better they do. And my guess is not very. I think maybe they win a couple of those games because they can reach higher offensive heights. So maybe like their ceiling is higher against the Nuggets. They can like steal a game or two. But I just have a hard time imagining them winning four games against that team if they're at all healthy.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the Thunder are just kind of on another level in the West this season. So I think the question almost at this point is like them or the field. I mean, I know Denver's looked a lot better, and obviously Lakers are a little bit more interesting now. There's Memphis, if you believe in them. But yeah, I mean, on the Lakers, after the Mark Williams trade, and assuming he was going to be healthy, I was kind of ready to be like, I don't know, I feel like this team could be better than people think they will.
If he was healthy, I was like, they might be able to
the finals. Like, I was almost ready to go there, to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, I think they have as big of a single weakness as any playoff team will. And it's a big one. I mean, I feel like the days of a center's kind of being a dime a dozen are not here anymore. I mean, like, we've seen like all of the teams that have had any sort of sustained level of success in the postseason, you need somebody reliable there. And it doesn't have to be a Jokic. It can be a
Exactly. They don't have to be your best player. They have to be somebody good though.
Yeah. A Gafford Lively duo, like 48 minutes of like strong rim running, rim protection. Like, that's all you need, but you do need that. And like, you look on Boston's front, it's like Porzingis was out, but like Horford is still underratedly really good still. You know what I mean? Like any team, the Lakers would probably love to have Horford playing center for them right now. So it's going to be tough. I still
LeBron
think
would finally have a peer on the team too. He'd be excited. You
know? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I feel like, where I'm at is like, I think probably second round loss is the median outcome. I mean, they certainly could flame out first round too. Like, it could be that the weaknesses you called out could totally get amplified. But I do think conference finals could be on the table, only because like, you look back at like 2022 and the Mavs made the conference finals. Like, their center rotation was Dwight Powell and Maxi Kleber. Like, that was
You're
the
right.
rotation.
The Lakers are going to get Maxi Kleber back. Everything's fixed, you know?
But I'm just saying, like, Dwight Powell and Jackson Hayes, and like, I mean, they're pretty comparable. I mean, Powell was probably a little better back then than he is now, obviously, but he's never been spectacular. I mean, so if he can drag a team like with that center rotation with a clearly inferior supporting cast to what he has now to a conference finals. And I think that was a little bit of a weird year because like the Lakers missed the playoffs. Kawhi was out, so the Clippers missed the playoffs. Phoenix kind of just imploded, and like Ja got hurt. Like, there was a lot of injuries, so I think they benefited a little bit from that. I don't know if that team was like a true legitimate conference finals level team, but regardless, he took them there. And that was the
last year that I think was affected by the shutdown in 2020, where it's like that created like, okay, this weird bubble field for that year. And then like the real thing that it created was like the next year, where it's like, okay, who's ready to do the season again a month later, you know? And there was like a weird season there. And then a bunch of guys got hurt. And so it's like that extends into the following season. And I think like we're finally out of that now, but that was the last season where there was still some of that weirdness, you know, like tracing back to how quickly the seasons had been flipped around.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I just feel like Luka is such an X factor that like, he's always going to have a chance in any series, like regardless of who he's going up against. And so I think that highly of him personally. I mean, I think he is, outside of Jokic, he's the next guy, in my opinion. I know Giannis is still spectacular. Shea's having a great year, but We've seen it more with Luka. You know, we've seen him do more with less, which is what he's going to have to do. But it's all really going to depend, I think, a little bit on matchups, like you said. Like if they play Thunder second round, which is what they would do right now, like that's going to be really tough. I don't think they're going to beat OKC. Yeah. But if they can somehow finagle their way up to the three seed, or something happens where maybe they get like Memphis second round, like that, I could totally see them beating Memphis, because we just haven't seen them prove it at the highest level in the postseason, even though they've been very consistent over the last 5 years or so, outside of last season when they were totally decimated by injuries. But I don't know. Luka as the clear and away best player in a series like that, I'm always going to think he has a chance, but I think it's also going to come down to how well this team can mash and gel. You know, they're going to need to get reps, and there's a reason that we've very rarely seen legitimate all-star, especially all NBA level guys, traded midseason that lead to sort of any sort of success that season, at least. It's normally like the next year is when it happens. I think Rasheed Wallace was the last time in 2004 where it was like a midseason all-star acquisition where it ended up leading to a finals appearance or something like that. So it's just hard to acclimate midseason. And so I think those two factors, the matchups plus the how well can they gel and how quickly can they gel, are going to be what it comes down to. But I think you're tempered expectations are fair, and I think second round probably makes most sense for what this team could probably peek out. But I can't rule out the conference finals, is all I'll say.
No, I mean, neither can I. You know, like, Luka is that good. It's just like, how good is he going to be within this context, within half a season, like you're saying? And, you know, like, how quickly can everyone adjust to playing Luka ball around him, you know, over the final 30-ish games of the season? And like, are they going to get to that high of a level where things are that seamless that he can just sort of go cook and everyone is sort of orbiting around him flawlessly, you know? Mm-hmm. And it, like, maybe they can get there. There certainly is a lot of offensive talent and, you know, smarts and basketball IQ on this team, but it's not the option I would pick.
Yeah, no, totally fair. Yeah. So I guess I feel like there's been a lot of discussion about like, oh, well, this will be a transition year. And like, I don't want to say throwaway season, because you never should have a throwaway season with a guy like Luka on your team, and especially with LeBron and his age.
I was going to say, or with LeBron. Yeah.
Totally. And I totally understand the sentiment there of like, look, this roster was not intentionally constructed the way it is. Like, it was kind of fell in their laps and they were like, okay, well, this is too good of a thing to turn down, so we're going
to
do it.
We have to do this, and we'll figure out any complications from it down the line.
Yeah. Totally. But this wasn't like their vision, you know, we're going to pair Luka and LeBron. And so I'm sure if they a couple more transaction cycles and they're going to be able to put together more complementary pieces, more defense on the perimeter, obviously fill the center spot. But do you think it's a mistake for them to try to treat this as like a transition season? I mean, LeBron he started a little slow to the season, but since December 21st, he's averaging 26 points, 9 assists, 7.5 rebounds on 55% from the field, 43% from three. Like, he's legitimately been playing really, really well. And even since, like you said, in the first game with Luka there, it looked like he had a little extra pep in his step. Even the game before that, when they played Clippers. Okay. Didn't they win in New York too, on the night of the trade?
So they won in New York on the night of the trade. I don't know that LeBron knew the trade was coming.
He looked a little spry in that game, is all I'm going to say.
I think that was, I'm playing in MSG and maybe this is my last time, and you know, who knows how things are going to go. And so I'm going to, you know, he always goes a little all out for those games based on everything that has been reported. And like, look, I'm the first one that's going to be skeptical of reporting sometimes. And like, you know, okay, who does this benefit to have this out there? And like, is LeBron going to, but like, I just have a hard time believing that LeBron knew this was coming at all.
Yeah, and that's totally fair.
But I will say, like, it was just even having Luka in the building for him against the Clippers a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, because they blew the Clippers out.
Yeah,
in that one,
was, like, running off. Like, he looked like he was, like, 25-year-old LeBron for, a couple minute spurts of time there. He was like, oh, my God, I'm so excited I get to play with this. You know, he really is, like, he was leaned forward in the chair, you know, at that point, the meme.
Oh, yeah,
So I think, you know, and he's been great. It's like you said, he had a rough start to the season, and this was the first season where I was like, oh man, like, is this it? Like, is this finally the one where it's like, obviously, like, he was still good and he was still like a productive player, but you were watching enough times where it's like, oh man, he's struggling to get by that guy. Like,
he just didn't have the same burst some of the times. And there were some games where you're like, 3 for 11, 10 points. Like, he's squeaking by on that 10 plus points record thing. So
And it's like, okay, is this finally, like, are we finally seeing the signs of decline? Like, I'm not saying he's washed or he's like completely fallen off a cliff, but like, is this, you know, are we finally starting to see him, you know, extend down the downslope of the roller coaster? And, you know, I mean, I think we are to some degree. He's obviously not as good as he was 5 years ago, but he is, you know, he has been unbelievably effective for the last little while. And, you know, so to your original question about like, is this a mistake to throw away a year of LeBron? Like, I would say in a vacuum, like, yeah, but I also think that you have to do it when, like, if you're offered Luka and sort of like this basically life vest for your franchise to, you know, they went in one night, they went from, okay, so is LeBron going to retire at the end of this year? Does he play one more year? But is it worth like sort of going in on all the picks for like him and AD has a checkered injury history? And then like, okay, so what? They're going to rebuild around AD and Austin Reeves, you know, after LeBron retires. And like Austin's going to be making a lot more by that point. And like, this is sort of starting to look like a little bit of like a dicey path to mediocrity at this point, you know? And they went from that to, okay, yeah, they're just building around Luka for the next like 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, like, and so it's, they completely sort of, and they still, you know, have some assets to go and, you know, go and chase guys that can play with Luka, to say nothing of, you still have this like fairly effective LeBron, and you have Austin Reeves still on the bargain contract for one more year. And, you know, it's like they have some real assets and weapons here, you know, with one more transaction cycle. And I think to their credit, they tried not to waste this year. I think the only reason you pay a first round pick and a pick swap and your only sort of current first round pick on the roster in Dalton Knecht, whatever you think of him, like he's solid and at least like has like, he'll probably play several years in the NBA at the very least.
Yeah.
And is a really good shooter, you know, to give all of that up for Mark Williams, who has played one season in three seasons. You know, it, like that's a little bit of a gamble, which tells me that they took it seriously. They're like, we have an opportunity here. We owe it to, you know, I mean, it seems like they did it more for Luka, but I'm sure LeBron was part of the calculus in that it's like, okay, we're doing this for Luka, but how many times is Luka going to have a teammate as good as LeBron for us to go in and do this for, you know, while he's on our roster? Obviously, you know, we hope it's a lot, but we don't know. And so I think they did their best. And it just so happened that they did the physical on Mark Williams. And they're like, yeah, we just like, even if we're willing to gamble, like we just cannot do this. This is too dangerous. And so, you know, I think it put them in a little bit of a bind. And so like, I think they would probably agree with both of us that you can't just waste a year of Luka and LeBron, but it's like, you know, if you're acquiring a guy that you don't even think is going to be able to play this year, theoretically, or be all that reliable, then at some point you're punting on a year of Luka and LeBron anyway. And so do you want to give it up just for the optics of it? Like, no. And so it's, you know, I think they did their best, you know, and I'm not someone who's given this front office a ton of credit over the last several years, but I think that they sort of tried to make the best of like a crazy, you know, obviously like, you know, complete parachute falling in their lap situation, but, you know, that left them with very little time to be like, okay, what's the next move? They tried to make something happen and then they just sort of ran up against the buzzer.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Just in the sense of like, because if the Mark Williams trade goes through, then this isn't even really a question. You know, they kind of went for it. But
it's like, if they made the Mark Williams trade a week earlier, like if they made the Luka trade a week earlier, so they make the let's just say in that timeline, they make the Mark Williams trade several days later again, they have time to figure out his physical and deny it before the trade deadline. Do they go try and go get another center? Like, is there some other team that calls them and they're like, well, hey, we know you didn't green light the Mark Williams physical, but like, you know, we're the Nets and we'll get, you know, we'd be willing to give you Claxton for a pick and a swap. I don't know that the Nets would do that. I'm just making up a name.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
Do the Lakers at that point say like, oh, okay, all right, yeah, let's just go get this center instead. And, you know, but where now they, even though there's teams that know what they were willing to offer for a center, they can't do anything about it.
Yeah. And I guess it is probably just unfortunate timing. That's the dangers of doing things up against the deadline, like you mentioned, because now they're kind of just like,
this is why I always tell teams, don't procrastinate. You know, the Lakers got a lesson of it. It's like, stop being like, we can't do anything until the day of the trade deadline. Why? Just make the moves that you want to make. It's like, is the price going to be that different in 2 weeks? I don't believe that. Like, it's, you know,
That's why part of me is almost like, I mean, unless Mark Williams' career is like totally toast, then I feel like they maybe should have just said, you know what, we'll take him. We'll figure it out. We trust our training staff. Like, he's not. Well, and the weird thing is like,
well,
he was
I don't think they trust their training staff. So,
that's probably fair.
You know, what have they been saying the last several years? Every time LeBron or AD has asked for a center or any help whatsoever, they're like, well, you know, we don't want to acquire any guys that have had hard problems, a hard time staying healthy.
You know? It's fair.
It's like, well, to me, that says you don't think that your training staff is like better than the other training staffs in the league at keeping guys healthy.
Yeah. Because I'm like,
given results, hard for me to argue with.
Yeah. But it is interesting because like Mark Williams was playing games right before this trade. Like it wasn't like he was currently injured and now he's not playing. And I don't know if that's about like they're just.
I was wondering if that was like a word not going to play him so that we have grounds to stand on in this lawsuit. Like,
yeah. But then I'm like, is this more of a damage control thing too, where they're trying to like mend that relationship till he comes back? I mean, I know Connect like missed a game right after it as well. So
but he was I don't know. He sat on the bench and then he ended up playing.
So I don't know. I feel like I would have had to, and again, maybe it was really that bad, but I feel like it would have been quite bad for me to be like, I don't think we should go forward with this just because I don't know. I just feel like his career, unless it's over in the next like 2-3 years, like he's got a lot of runway to be able to get healthy and, you know, but I don't know. It's hard to argue about this year
at that point. It's like, is it worth not only taking a gamble on him this year, but then having to worry about the re-signing in a year and the extension talks? And then also, you know, if we aren't sure this guy's going to stay healthy for this year, do we really want to use some of our limited assets on
him? I get it. They didn't have much left.
Assets and move them, you know, like they just did not have very much left. Like you can say Dalton Connect and like a pick while Luka is still probably going to be in a Lakers uniform, like are not that much to give up, but it's like that's all you have. And the Lakers just saw that, you know, if you have stuff, sometimes Nico Harrison calls you and makes you an offer you can't refuse. And so it's like, you know, you just got to keep the bare minimum of powder dry.
No, I totally get that. But I guess next question would then be, who do you think they should target in the offseason in the next transaction cycle? I mean, obviously they're going to have to add a center, like that, no way around it. I know we've mentioned a few names. So more of a short-term stopgap like Clint Capella. They could revisit Mark Williams stuff for a cheaper price, maybe. They could look at a guy like
Claxton.
Something
tells me those two teams are not getting a deal done.
Probably not.
For a while.
Probably not. But then you mentioned like a Nick Claxton. He was somebody that after the Luka trade went down, I called out as a guy that I thought would be a good fit. I think he's, 27 years old, something like that. He's not overly expensive. He's like $25 million a year, but he's good role player. We've seen him like not be super effective over the last year or so, but it's kind of more of a product of the team he's on. And we know that when he's
even admitted, like it's hard for him to get up for these games sometimes, which I thought was an astounding thing to admit in post-game interviews, but it's like also like, I mean, fair enough. You know, it's like if your team is like, if anyone who plays good, your team is like, we're trading them, then it's like, what is your incentive to play good?
Totally. Yeah, no, I get it. But we've seen him play at like all defensive level over the past few years, like when he was a little bit more engaged and the team was more competitive and stuff. So I thought that could have been a really good fit. Obviously, he's not like a floor spacer or anything like that, but he's extremely versatile on the defensive end. And again, not a totally elite rebounder or anything like that, but he's a lob threat. And he's a guy that can run the pick and roll with Luka and LeBron. So is he a guy you would target? I know you mentioned Walker Kessler. What are some other names that you think are potentially realistic and that you think would be a good fit?
Yeah, so I think both of those guys are interesting. And like Claxton in the sense as well that it's, you know, like he's a guy that's easier to make a deal for in the offseason when you can have more uneven trades. And, you know, it's like you don't have to play. Teams aren't worried about, oh, who are we going to play the next night or whatever. Like there's these small sort of factors that make, mostly roster limits, that make in-season trades more difficult than something like that would be to pull off in the offseason. And so I think he's a guy that you would have to guess is probably going to be available still. Like the Nets seem to be like they're in
selling everybody, so
like a proper rebuild. And so, you know, maybe they try to go all in and do the Nets thing this summer and they're like, we're going to sign the best players we can and have an entertaining team in Brooklyn, because they seem to sort of go back and forth on what they want to do every other year. But you know, he's a guy that is you know, at least somewhat interesting. You know, I think there's, to varying degrees, like Robert Williams and Mitchell Robinson are sort of interesting names, but then again you're running into the same like, can these guys stay healthy that you are with Mark Williams? And you know, with even a more extended track record of the answer being no,
and they're older and more expensive. Exactly. So I those are names that I like for them too, but I mean, it's like, if you're not going to take the chance on Mark Williams, then I don't see why you would trust those guys more. You know what I mean?
So, unless you found something on his physical price, you're like, that, you know, like the Hornets just had never done an MRI on him before or something like that. You know, it's just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what they found, but to me, like, I'm guessing they had to find something that they just really didn't feel comfortable with, because otherwise, why do you rescind that trade? You know,
it just doesn't make sense
logically that you would trade for the guy knowing all the health concerns and then do the physical and be like, actually, we can't do this. And then be willing to, like, basically get into a legal battle with the Hornets and stand on business over it. And so I think, you know, those two, obviously, like, those guys are interesting. I'd be interested in Kessler. I have a hard time believing that Danny Ainge is going to willingly trade him to the Lakers now, when especially he just accidentally helped them completely torpedo the value of that future protected pick that he has from the D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt trade. And so I don't think that's probably going to happen, but maybe it does. Like, if they just decide, you know, we're moving on from Kessler regardless, the Lakers are willing to offer, like, a real package for him. And, you know, they are at least two front offices who've gotten deals done in the past. And so, you know, maybe there's something to be said there. So, like, those are all names that are sort of interesting to me. You know, does Nico Harrison call and offer, you know, Daniel Gafford for a protected second, you know, in the middle of the night at some point, you know,
can't rule it out.
So, I don't know. I mean, are there other guys around the league that you like? For the, those are sort of the names that I've been, you know, thinking a lot about over the last several years, talking about centers and stuff. But I don't know if there's ones that you think are more interesting now.
No, I think those are a lot of the main names. I mean, I agree with you on the Kessler front. I'd be kind of shocked if Danny Ainge, I mean, unless I don't doubt that he'd move Kessler, but I think it's going to be one of those, like, all right, two first plus, you know, something else. Like,
and it's also like, you know, it's like maybe he's more willing to, because it's like, well, I mean, that pick screwed anyway, you know? And so like, I may as well, you know, get something else from these,
because they're going to get a center regardless, you know what I mean? But we'll see. I feel like that return is just going to, the ask is going to be so high, not even just for the Lakers. I think it's just in general. I haven't really understood why Kessler's name's been surfacing so many trade rumors. I'm like, I think
it's because he's on a Danny Ainge team, and Danny Ainge during a rebuild year is like, you can have anyone you want if you're willing to blow me out of the water for it.
It's fair. Like, you know? Yeah, it is fair. And it's not like Utah. I mean, like, they've been doing this for a couple of years now, but it's like, I don't really have any, like, star potential level guys. Like, they're definitely years away from this starting to turn around. They need to add they've got some complimentary guys that are nice,
depending on who they add in the draft this year. Cause, you know, if you get like a Cooper Flagg, all of a sudden you're like, you know, you're on a little bit of a more quicker path back to contention maybe.
Yeah. Exactly. But then, yeah, I mean, another name, I like, the problem with this guy is like, he just makes a lot of money, so it could be pretty difficult, but like, I think he'd be really cheap in a trade is DeAndre Ayton, just cause, you know, his value is completely depreciated at this point. They've already got Klingon kind of waiting to take over that starting spot. They still have Robert Williams, like you mentioned. Like, I don't think they can go into another season holding all three of those guys. And Ayton is actually, I mean, I think he's this expiring contract next year. I think it's the last year of his deal.
I believe you're right. Yeah.
So at that point, it's like, yeah, he's getting overpaid. He's overpaid, but like, it's only one season. It's not going to kill you. The harder part would be matching salaries. Obviously, you might have to give up more than you'd want from a player perspective. But I cannot imagine they'd have to give up a first round pick or anything close to that for him, just given the situation. So that's another name that I was kind of like, look,
we just found what's going to happen, because the only thing that could torture Suns fans more, like, I'm always looking for, like, what is going to upset Suns fans the most, because that seems to be
if he's good.
History has trended towards the last several years is just like, how can we, like, make Suns fans' lives miserable for whatever reason? And it's like Luka Doncic, who they passed on to draft DeAndre Ayton, unlocking DeAndre Ayton and making him a champion is like maybe the most psychically damaging thing that could happen to Suns fans. And so we just figured out what's going to happen.
It doesn't get much worse than that, I will say. But yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think that could be something like that could be a decent fit, but it would also be pretty funny that the full circle moment with Luka and him as well. So
I guess Miles Turner is a name I'll throw out there again. For whatever reason, he seemed to be at least semi available from Indiana. I don't know how real that was, or if that was more of like we are in sort of contentious negotiations. Let's just see what people are willing to offer us for him. And if we get like a crazy offer, but if he's a guy that's available, he obviously would also be like an incredible ad for.
Yeah. I believe he's a free agent, so it would probably have to be a sign and trade or something like that, which is doable. I mean, Lakers are in the first apron, correct?
They're in the first apron.
Okay,
they're,
so
they're,
I don't.
They're below the second apron. So yeah, I think sign and trade may be tough. So
yeah, so that's kind of why
involved, and
that's the only reason I didn't totally mention him is because I think the logistics behind that get a little difficult. But yeah, I mean, he'd be a good fit too. But I kind of honestly like prefer. It's funny because I feel like Turner came into the league as like a defensive specialist, and he's now kind of transitioned into an offensive specialist. Like he's great shooting from outside, but his defense, like I mean, Indiana hasn't had a good defense in a long time since he's been there. And like, he is a good shot blocker, but he doesn't really like command the paint in the same way that a lot of
to be fair to him, if you had those four guys around you, you may not want to expend all your effort trying to plug all the holes on defense either.
It's fair. But no, it's very fair. But yeah, so, I mean, I think those are a lot of the names, and I ultimately like, I don't doubt that they're going to add somebody along those lines, but I mean, it could be someone we don't even expect because Mark Williams was not someone that I had on the radar. I saw some little tidbits on Twitter saying that they called Detroit about Jaren Duren, who again, like kind of similar vibe to Mark Williams. I think they were even the same draft class, the same age roughly, and same sort of skill set. I like him too. I worry a little bit more about him defensively as well. Cause I don't, I mean like, he's kind of like a stiff on that end a little bit, but he's a totally elite rebounder and like good lob threat, and he'd be good for them offensively.
Yeah, he's
but
the lob threat thing is what I was saying. Like he's the type of guy that Luka would love spoon feeding. You know?
Totally. Yeah. So, but yeah, those are kind of some names, but we'll see what happens. I bet that they add somebody, and they better, because the window
you certainly, there's no excuses. You can't waste another season or half season where you're like, oh, you know, we still have the whole trade transaction cycle to get a deal done. It's like, no, you have Luka right now. You at least presumably are still going to probably have LeBron right now. Like you have to make something happen this off season and try and make a serious run at it from the get go and not try and do the whole, we're just going to do a midseason overhaul and then try to sprint to the finish again.
Yeah. And one other thing that I will say, if they wanted to swing big, I do think that a guy like Austin Reeves could potentially be expendable just now with having Luka. I mean, I think he was like indispensable for what they were doing before Luka got there because like they just needed somebody they could trust with the ball in their hands outside of LeBron. Exactly. But now that they have three of those guys, basically, like, I don't know what his value would be in the open market, but probably one of if not the best contracts in basketball. Like we mentioned earlier, like I think he has just become tremendously underrated as an initiator and playmaker and shot creator and all of those things on the offensive end. He's still a really good knockdown shooter guy as well. Gets to the free throw line super well. So him plus one, like the last first round pick that the Lakers have, like I do wonder, like that's a really nice package that I don't know if there's a name even big enough out there to warrant them offering that, but it does give them a little bit more ammo, in my opinion, that I think Reeves is at least went from kind of borderline untouchable to like, all right, like if it helps the team, we consider it. So,
yeah, I'm completely there with you. Like, it's a funny, logically, I'm completely there with you. My heart says absolutely not. Sean, shut the hell up. I'm going to like send me your address right now. We will not trade Austin Reeves. But he's a guy I obviously like I have like loved his journey. He's been so much fun to watch, like grow and improve every single year and whatever. But for exactly the reasons you said, he's someone that before they made the Mark Williams trade, I was even saying, you know, with Luka here, like Austin may be a little bit more expendable than he was previously. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not trying to push him out the door. I enjoy having Austin on my team, but it's like, you know, if you know, for the exact reasons you said, Luka and LeBron can sort of handle your ball handling for the most part. And like Austin will be helpful within that context, but he's not irreplaceable anymore. You can find like a third sort of guard initiator for like, you know, more easily on the fringes than you can find a good big. And so do you exchange him for that good big and have him be part of the package that is not just salary ballast, but like is actually part of the value that you're sending out in that. And so maybe you only need one first round pick to go get someone interesting or whatever it may be.
Yeah, no, totally. I think we're aligned there, and we'll see what comes about. Like if they, like I said, there might be a name that we're not even thinking about that is more available than we think, or maybe isn't available now, but will be. So we'll see. But I did just
Rudy Gobert when the Timberwolves just don't have an owner. I don't know. Like they're gonna sue each other into no one owns the team and everyone's a free agent. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that would be tough salary wise, but I will say, I mean, like that would be a dream for them. I mean, suddenly
it would be so so funny if Luka and LeBron and Gobert on the same team after all the ways that those previous two have tried to torture the former one. You know, it's just yeah, that would
be. No, it is
Luka, like Luka playing with Gobert, given how little he clearly respects him, would be so funny. And I'm actually sort of rooting for it now.
Yeah. I mean, Minnesota's like been in rumors about like they were trying to get KD, and I'm like, what are you offering for KD? Like, you got their second apron team. But they're second apron team, so like they can't even aggregate salaries. I don't know. They would have to dump a lot of salary to be able to make anything like that work.
I think it would have had to be a three-team trade probably, or multi-team. Yeah.
Yeah. But before we wrap up, I know we're getting a little long here, but just want to ask real quick on the All-Star. Obviously, it's All-Star weekend right now. We had some of the three-point challenge, the skills challenge, the dunk contest last night, the new All-Star format tonight. So wanted to get your take on sort of your, obviously we haven't seen what the new All-Star format likes, but or looks like, but do you foresee it being a better product? And then is there any sort of ideas you have to kind of spruce up the weekend in general? Because obviously the past few years, it hasn't hit quite the same as it maybe used to, seeing dudes get 40 out of 50 on dunks that they didn't even make, things like that. So the game's obviously
participation trophy culture, it's out of control. I was explaining to my wife that I learned at some point, I forget where I read this, but the dunk judges are only given a 7 as their lowest card, and so even if they wanted to rate a dunk lower than a 7, they could not. And so,
and they still didn't even go 7 on the Vuzelas failed attempt last night.
He's a nice kid, he tried, you know. Yeah, and so, you know, as far, like, since the All-Star game's tonight, like, I'm not going to guess, since that'll be bad radio for your podcast, whether or not I think it's going to work, but, like, I do think that there is a scenario where the NBA could have just accidentally fixed the All-Star game, because I don't think that this was their intention. I think their intention was, like, let's change some things, because that's what the NBA likes to do and whatever. And I did also, as an aside, think it was very funny that there were all the leaks about, like, Adam Silver was working very closely with Steph Curry, you know, on this All-Star weekend. And then as soon as the new format came out and everyone hated it, it's like, this was all Adam Silver's idea, you know? And so it wasn't the guy who hosts game shows in his spare time coming up with this game show format for the All-Star game. But I do think that it's like, I understand why people are skeptical of this new format working. Maybe by the time this pod comes out, it's going to be very obvious that it did not work. But I think that the idea that it sort of sparks for me is because I was thinking the other night, like, how funny it would have been if the G League Rising Stars team was the one that made it in. And then those guys are like, this is our only chance on national TV to play against, like, LeBron and KD and whatever. Like, we are going to go balls to the wall and hope that these guys are not going to play that hard on defense. And, like, let them try to not take it seriously with how hard we're going to. We are going to play, like, this is game 7 and the loser is being executed, you know, like, just to make a name for ourselves. Like, this is like that's like a sports movie, you know, we're like, you know. And so I was thinking, like, you know, what if the Rising Stars just say the same thing? What if they're like, you know, hey, we're not all stars, but, like, we could play basketball. Like, what, you know how valuable it's going to be to our reputations if we go out there and we beat LeBron and KD, you know, because I think that's the team that they're playing.
Yeah, they're playing the OGs, they call it. So all the old heads.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, what team would you think is maybe the least likely to take them seriously and, you know, take the All-Star game seriously? It's the OGs that are like, wait, no, you're not supposed to rotate on defense right now. Don't you guys know how this game is played? And so I think that it's like, so, you know, I don't think that necessarily, like, the Rising Stars are not, I would be floored if they won the whole thing or whatever, but what the idea that it gave me is, what if in one of those teams, instead, on for the Rising Stars night, you keep the same format, but it's like, okay, you have two teams of Rising Stars, you have one team of G Leaguers, and then you have one team that's the all team snub. And it's all these guys who every single year they complain about, like, oh, I didn't make the All-Star game and how could they leave me out? And oh my God, didn't they see my numbers? Whatever. And it's like, instead of just, you know, pissing and moaning about it all like through the media for like several weeks, it's like, no, I'm going to join Team Sub and we're going to beat all these Rising Stars guys and we're going to go win the All-Star game and show why I should have been an All-Star. And with the incentive being, if you win, whatever the top three finishers in that tournament of All-Stars are the ones that actually get to call themselves All-Stars on their resume at the end of the year. So if you come in last place, you were not an all-star that year. So you just gave up your vacation and you don't even get the all-star bonus on your contract.
I like that.
I don't know how feasible this is.
Yeah.
But I think that that's how you bring some competition back to the game. You know?
Yeah, I do kind of like that, honestly.
I was going to blog this, but I didn't even get a chance. So I'm unleashing it here. It's got to go somewhere before the game.
I haven't heard that idea, but I because as you were talking through it, I was like thinking in my head, well, that probably only works if you kind of like give them all-star if they win. But that's right where you were going. So I think that would be good. The only thing I would then say is like, the two winners, like they might still not care for the final, but it might be more of a like reverse tournament where you're not trying to win. You're just trying to not get last, like not lose basically. So like the third place consolation game is like a bloodbath. Yeah. Like that's the game everyone wants to see.
You have flagrant fouls in the 3-4 consolation game.
Yeah. No, I actually like that idea, honestly. Cause I
don't know if that's like even contractually allowable under like the current CBA or whatever, but I would love someone of their all-star.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, I don't know if that's like, I don't know if they're allowed it. And like the NBA is like so cowardly about like, oh, we don't want to make the stars sad while they're making all this money. You know, like we don't want to hurt anyone's feelings.
Yeah.
So like, they're so worried about like guys being like embarrassed, you know, when the whole thing is you're supposed to be like this professional competition.
Yeah.
But so I don't know if they would ever actually do it, but that's how you fix the all-star game.
Yeah. I mean, it's fair.
Like imagine LeBron and KD having to lose their all-star streaks because they lost the 3-4 game.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, like, I do feel like, I mean, you can't even complain at that point. Like, you had a chance to win this game.
Yeah, you had two games to hold on to your all-star streak. You know?
And you lost to Trae Young and Devin Booker and whoever else didn't make it.
Yeah,
and
the perennial members of the all-snub team, you know?
Exactly. No, I like that.
They could just name that team Trae and just have him on it every year, you know?
I know. He did end up making it through injury reserves, but
the only way he ever makes it is like injury reserve. They're like, okay, this guy probably should have made it on the initial one, but we're just gonna put him in now because the coaches hate him. And
I know it is funny. I mean, other discussion. They probably should just expand the rosters to 15 because it's like, real rosters are 15. I don't know.
That would make a mockery of the game unless they do it for Dwayne Wade and Dirk Nowitzki when they're
not all-star level players. But.
Yeah.
But cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for hopping on, Harrison. If you want to do any sort of plug for yourself, feel free to do so. But it was a pleasure talking hoops with you.
No, it's always fun, Sean. And I'll just tell people, you know, follow SBNation.com/NBA, SBNation.com/WNBA. I oversee all of our pro basketball coverage at SBN. So that includes like the team sites. That includes our new full-time WNBA writer, Noah Dalzell, who we actually sent out to All-Star Weekend this year and has been doing amazing coverage of the WNBA and Unrivaled. And so, you know, as the NBA season starts to wind down, like we're getting into the home stretch. I know nobody wants to think about like, oh, it's almost over, but it's, you know, we're at least more than halfway towards the end. And, you know, the W is going to be starting up soon. There's obviously been like a tremendous amount of momentum behind that. Unrivaled has been really interesting. And so I would recommend giving Noah and her coverage at Breakaway a follow. And then also, you know, all of our, if you have an NBA team, chances are we have an NBA team site for you, and SBNation.com will be covering the league as a whole. So check it all out if you're interested.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much again, Harrison. Really appreciate you hopping on.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. Thank you so much for listening. Definitely hoping that we have a little bit of a better product tonight for the All-Star game, but obviously we will see how that all plays out. But going to have a lot more content coming out over the next coming weeks. Likely going to do some contender tiers coming up now that we've kind of got the rosters all set post deadline and a lot of the new pieces starting to get integrated with their new teams and we have a better feel for where everyone's at. But with that said, thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you soon.